This week, my Uncle Ole called me to chat. He is my mother's older brother, and he doesn't call me very often. He may call maybe 3 times a year, but when he does call, it's usually because there's something noteworthy going on in the church, and he loves church gossip. He's a retired Lutheran pastor. And so, but like a lot of retired pastors, they still want to kind of keep their hand in, and he loves to know what's going on. So his associate pastor that at the church where they go is now going to be an assistant to the bishop, and so he called because he wanted to talk about that. But he also wanted to talk about what I'd been preaching. For most of September, Ole has been in and out of the hospital, and so it's meant that he couldn't go to his weekly pastor's study group. But as his friends have called on him or come to visit him, he told me he's been asking everyone, what did they do with the parable of the dishonest steward that we had just a couple weeks ago? It's a really tough text to preach on, and so apparently he's been taking a poll to find out, so what did you do? So when he asked me the question, I gave him my answer, and he said, oh, well, that's interesting. And then I explained that it wasn't just me. I had been reading a book and told him the name of the book and who wrote it. But what I really should have done is said to him, what are you going to do with this week's gospel? Because it's tricky, and it's tricky in more than one way. For the past several weeks, our gospel lessons have come from Jesus' last months. He is making his final journey to Jerusalem. He knows that his death is coming, and so as he's making his way, Jesus spends day after day teaching lessons on discipleship. And so this summer, we have heard story after story, parable after parable about how to live as a disciple of God. He talks about hospitality and the importance of welcoming strangers. He talks about helping people even when they're your enemies. He tells stories about the lost sheep and the lost coins, the prodigal sons, the rich man and Lazarus, and of course, the parable of the dishonest steward. And then he really lays it all on the line in chapter 17. He says, there will always be something that causes people to sin, but anyone who causes them to sin is in for trouble. A person who causes even one of my littlest followers to sin would be better off thrown into the ocean with a heavy stone tied around their neck. So be careful what you do. Correct any followers of mine who sin, and forgive the ones who say they are sorry, even if one of them mistreats you 7 times in one day. If they say, I am sorry, you should still forgive that person. And the apostles said to the Lord, make our faith stronger. That's where our text for today picks up. In Luke's telling of the gospel, there are all kinds of times when Jesus questions the faith of the disciples. More than once, he says to them, you have such little faith. When they're caught out in a storm on the Sea of Galilee and they wake up Jesus because they're afraid they're going to die, Jesus challenges them and says, where is your faith? On the flip side, we find him commending people over and over again. Several people who come to him for healing, when he heals them, he says to them, you know, your faith has made you well, or he says something about them and their faith, and these are people he's never met before. The 12, of course, have left home and family and job to follow Jesus all over the countryside. They traveled with him since the beginning of his ministry. They have heard all about the good news to the poor. They have watched him give sight to the blind. They have observed the hostility of his opponents, and they've even been treated badly themselves simply because they are following Jesus. The fact that they are still with Jesus in the face of such opposition shows that they have some faith in him, but they want more. And that's when we get to the mustard seed. And I have been thinking about that little seed all week long. If I had that tiny amount of seed or of faith, as small as that seed, there is a dead tree out in the yard that I could pull up out of the ground and toss into Lake Noxumixon if I had enough faith. But I can't. So is my faith too small? How much faith do we need? Jesus' words don't feel terribly helpful. He doesn't give the apostles what they asked for, and it feels kind of like he's dumping on them for not having it all together. And then things get even more uncomfortable with the parable about the slave owners and the slaves. First, the 12 are asked to identify themselves with someone who apparently has enough money to own a slave, but just one. And so that slave has to do everything. They have to work out in the field, they have to take care of the crops, and then they have to come in and serve dinner. They have to be at work in the house as well. And then Jesus calls his followers to imagine that they're the slave, and he reminds them that a good slave doesn't expect to get thanked, even when that work is difficult and challenging. For 21st century Americans, the slave imagery doesn't help to make this text less confusing. It just muddles it up even more. The story is based on the premise that slavery isn't right or wrong. It's simply a part of the local economy. Jesus isn't saying that it's okay to own slaves or that it's okay to treat them badly. It's just an image that he is using. Slaves are expected to do the work that they're given to do. They don't get paid for it. They don't get applauded for getting it right. They get what they get, and they don't throw a fit. That's what it is to be a slave. So for Jesus to compare us to slaves is not meant as a judgment or a slam. It's not meant to say anything good or bad about being a slave. It's a parable. It's a story that he tells to make a specific point. And the point has to do with doing the work that we have been given to do. Now, I still can't help but think that Jesus seems a bit cranky in this chapter of Luke, but I think that what he is trying to tell his followers, including us, is that they don't need to worry about the size of their faith. You either have it or you don't. And even the tiniest amount, no bigger than a mustard seed, smaller than a mustard seed, enables great things on behalf of God's kingdom. The challenge is not that we need more faith. The challenge is to act on the faith that we already have. Just a speck of faith can empower you to do great things, but we don't need to do big, great things. I don't need to move that tree and dump it in the lake. I don't need to move mountains. I don't need to do any of those things. We need enough faith to do the faithful work of Christians. And so by Jesus' standards of measurement, unless you have no faith at all, you already have enough. The faith that you have is sufficient. The faith that brought you here this day, the faith that will bring you up to the table today to take the sacrament, to believe that this is the body and blood of Christ given for you, that is all the faith that you need to get the work done. That is enough to do the things that God is calling you to do. We are called to share the gifts we have, to share the resources that we are blessed with. And as Paul says to the Corinthians, we don't all have the same gifts, but we all have gifts necessary to doing the things that Jesus calls us to do, and to do them without needing to be fawned over or praised. It is nice to be thanked, but it isn't necessary. We are called to do what we do because we are Christians and nothing more. We forgive because that's what Christians do. We share because that's what we do. We feed and we clothe and we care and we visit because that's what Christians do. Professor Greg Leary is a teacher at the seminary in Lancaster. And at the end of a very serious theological study and analyzing all of this text, he added this: though raised in the church-centered Bible Belt, I did not grow up in a church. When I was 12, I spent a week in the hospital with a hip injury. I received two visits, one from my aunt and uncle's part-time pastor and one from a church youth group. The youth group, he says, brought acutely packaged soap and washcloth. Just a few years later, when I could embrace my faith, I remembered both of those visits because that's the kind of thing that Christians do. Though visits weren't extraordinary, but they were important to him, and he knew those people came because of their faith in Jesus Christ. Now, unfortunately, our culture is more interested in the sensational and the astounding. Our culture would rather see me move that tree and dump it into the lake and have all kinds of amazing stories and things about all this powerful stuff that I might do. But that's not really what it's all about. mustard seed faith. And ordinary discipleship don't typically get a lot of media time, and so it can be easy to question our faith when it doesn't feel extraordinary, when I don't feel like I'm doing great things. And don't get me wrong, the extraordinary can be marvelous. But I think that it's more important to remember that even the simplest, most mundane acts of faith have the potential to transform the life of another person. If we can see that every ordinary thing that we do is an opportunity to live out our faith, marvelous things can happen. Little things that cause someone else to see what is possible in Jesus Christ. Little moments that help somebody else know that God really does love them. That's what Christians do. And it only takes a little bit of faith. Enough faith to say, "Yes, Jesus, I will follow you. I will serve. I will give of my time and my love. Yes, Jesus."